in the latter part of the chapter at verse 4. So we'll start at verse 4. And when Jesus heard, he said, Hautehe asthenia, this sickness is not toward death, resulting in death, or maybe even for the purpose of death, but on behalf of the glory of God, so that the Son of God, doxaste, might be glorified, there's the aorist subjunctive passive, through it. Well, I mean, this is Jesus' interpretation. I touched on there because he's going to do that again. What you have throughout the chapter, I suppose, is the event being variously misinterpreted by different characters other than Jesus. Jesus is always calling people to realize what's really happening here, right? So he's the only one who sees clearly. So he states explicitly this event is so that the Son of Man might be glorified through this weakness or this sickness. And then, of course, for a while, his disciples are confused because they think, well, gee, this means that Lazarus is only physically sleeping, you know, and he clarifies that and so forth. And then verse 14, touching down there again, therefore, Jesus said to them, plainly, parezia, this is really quite good because he's Lazarus apethenin, Lazarus died. Idiots. Lazarus died. And I rejoice on account of you so that you may believe because I was not there. But let us go to him. And then Thomas the pessimist says, let's go up and die along with him. But once again, Jesus is having in verse 14 and 15, he has to interpret for them what's really happening and what its purpose really is. I'm glad for your sake that I wasn't there, so that you may believe. And then he goes up, of course, to Bethany, which is not too far. Other than Thomas thinks that this is it, this is curtains, because the opposition to Jesus is already high, and they're going up to the site of opposition. Yeah, something like that. You have an idea on that, Paul? No? Okay. Again, just whipping through, and then we'll slow down when we get to verse 32. This great conversation, he goes up to Bethany, Martha hears about it, and she goes out to meet him, and Mary stays in the house. Then verse 21. Martha then said to Jesus, Lord, here's a contrary to fact or an unreal conditional sentence. It's somewhat mixed. You might expect to see A plus the aorist, perhaps of ginomai, plus on and the aorist of apothnesco. But the New Testament does this. It mixes contrary to fact, conditional sentences, different parts. But if A eis hoda, if you had been here, uk on ap ethanen ha adelphos mu, my brother would not have died. But you weren't here. You weren't here, so he did die. And Jesus, then Martha continues, verse 22, but even now, kainun oida, I know that haza han aiteze tantheon, whatsoever things you ask God, doze soi hatheos, God will give you. So Martha really is, I mean, she does very well here. I mean, her faith in Jesus is very strong. It's just that, again, she's not quite understanding what's going on. She has some of the truth, but not all of the truth. And so Jesus leads her into seeing what's going on. First, initially, verse 23, Jesus says to her, your brother will rise. Martha replies in a very doctrinally sound manner. Verse 24, Martha says to him, I know that he will rise ente anastase, in the resurrection on the last day. Verse 25, Jesus, really a killer punchline in a sense. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, kan is formed when you smash kai and aon together. Okay? The one who believes in me, kan, even if, kai aon, even if he dies, he will live. And pas hadzon, everyone who lives, kai pisteuon, believes into me, will certainly not die, ever or forever, ume plus the aorist subjunctive, and then the typical idiom, eis ton iona, it means forever, or I think the English versions will never die, right? Do you believe this? We'll come back to this. And then verse 27. Martha, once again, wonderful confession. Martha says to him, yes, Lord, I have believed, ego pepistiuk, I have believed that you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one into the world who is coming, the one who is coming into the world. Now, John, of course, is big on inaugurated eschatology, right? Eternal life is not just on the last day, it's now. And this is one of the greatest passages because Martha's not wrong. Her brother will rise on the last day. But Jesus' point is that the last day is already now. I mean, all the Gospels have inaugurated eschatology in them, but John is the strongest in this regard. And the punchline, again, trying to organize Jesus' interaction with the other people in the story, it's like, even though Martha has this much of understanding of what's going on, even more than that is possible because Jesus, who is now present, is himself the resurrection. So much so that if you die, you'll be raised, and if you believe in him before you die, you'll never really die. Okay, and it's just it's obviously a great funeral text, and again, I don't know why this is in the middle of Lent. It's a little proleptic, I guess, for Easter. Don't forget to work that angle. I mean, if you ever preach on this aspect of the text, that Martha's not wrong, she's right, but she's not right enough, right? She doesn't know at all. That, again, shockingly, and of course our big problem is that most Christians aren't waiting around for the resurrection of the dead. They don't really care about the resurrection of the dead. They don't think about it, right? They're waiting for their bodies to die so they can go to heaven, as we say, right? So Martha is better than we are in that regard because she knows that the goal of God's work and plan history is the renovation of the whole creation and of the bodies of his people on the last day, as well as their souls, of course. So she's waiting for the resurrection and for God's saving power. Jesus says, it's already here because I'm here. Right? So it's really, really great stuff. Let's see. Oh, good. We're not running out of time yet. Well, let's just kind of keep plowing through. Let's skip to verse 32, just in case we do run out of time. Mary calls Martha and says the teacher is here and so forth. And then we jump down to verse 32. Then Mary, a host Elton, when she came hapu, where Jesus was, when she saw him, iduzauton, epizenautu, pros tus padas, she fell of him to the feet. She fell at his feet. Leguza auto, saying to him, Kyria, Lord, here's the same comment, exactly the same comment that Martha has made. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. I was thinking about this story. Okay, it's a repetition. Jesus doesn't have the same conversation with Mary as he had with Martha. But what I decided I liked about the way the story is presented is that the tragedy of death is in no way diminished, is no way downplayed, right? Because we see, again, the grief of Mary, and then we see Jesus' own grief, right? So even though he is the resurrection, it's not as if this sort of paints a superficial coating over death and, you know, the tragedy that it brings. It's just that Jesus has come, obviously, to do what needs to be done about it. So I decided I like that very much. Verse 33, Jesus then, host Aiden, when he saw her weeping, or maybe you could take this, gee, I didn't think about this till the Holy Spirit just revealed it to me, the Ruach Yahweh just revealed that this is a participle of indirect discourse. When he saw that she was weeping, and those who had come together with her, the Jews, were weeping, then Jesus got embrimaomide with respect to spirit, and he troubled himself. He eterox and heoton. This embrimaomai is an interesting word. I think a lot of people at least think it means Jesus got angry. At the very least, he was very disturbed. And then the question is, it says when he saw their weeping, he got this way. And agitated, vexed, And one interpretation, at least, is when he sees the effect that death has on these people who believe in him and whom he loves. I mean, Jesus is really ticked off at death, and he is troubled. And verse 34, and he said, so some wonder, I mean, this is great two natures of Christ stuff here. I mean, we all know shortest verse in the Bible is coming up, right? Even shorter, there are no verses in Obadiah that are shorter than this, are they, Paul? No, okay, all right. And so again, it's the humanity and the reality of this whole thing is really nicely, wonderfully portrayed. Sometimes people accuse John of being a gospel in which Jesus sort of effortlessly, you know, moves from victory to victory, and it is clear in John that he's really in control, and you know, in the garden they fall backwards when they try to arrest him and so forth. But so that theme is certainly there, but the Jesus of John's gospel is still a real human being as well, not just this sort of Superman. We see that here. Verse 34, and he said, where have you placed him? They say to him, Lord, erhukai ida, come and see. And then verse 35, Jesus teared, right? Dakris is a tear. Jesus wept. Verse 36, then the Jews said to, began to say, look how he really loved him. He affiliated him. Oh, here's a good example. I didn't see this either. Once again, the Ruach Yahweh is at work. Probably in John, phileo and agapao are basically are synonyms. You know, I don't think you should make that much about, you know, agapao is always, you know, selfless love and so forth and so on. You could try to say that the Jews are misinterpreting Jesus here by accusing him of only having philia for John or for Lazarus, you know, but there's an interchangeability. John uses agape most of the time, of course. I wouldn't make anything of that here. See how he loved him. Verse 37, and certain of the Jews then said, let's see, the one who, go down to ha-anoixas, this one who opened the eyes of the blind guy, reference to chapter 9, okay, uk edinata poiesai, was he not able to do so that also this one might not die? That's a remarkable statement. Couldn't he have done something about this? They don't understand either that this is for the glory of God. They don't understand either that Jesus will, Son of God, will be glorified. Then Jesus again, because he was indignant in himself, or as he became indignant in himself, erchetai, he comes to the tomb. Einde spelion, and there was a cave, and a stone was put, ep eketa, upon it, ep auto. Jesus says, aratatan lithan, take away the stone, lift up the stone. The sister of the one who had come to completion, which is a teleutao, this is the perfect participle active of teleutao, it means to die. The sister of the one who had died, these perfect tenses are really good here, by the way. You know, he stands, he doesn't stand dead, I suppose he lays dead. He's in a condition of being dead. It's the ongoing result. It's not just he died, he's in the condition of being dead. There's a little bit of emphasis here, setting up the miracle, this great sign that Jesus is about to perform. The sister of the guy who was really dead, Martha, says, Lord, already, udze. I forgot to look that up, but the RSV memory in me says that means he stinks. Is that right? Is that what the English versions say? Help me out here. Is that right? Udzo. He odoriferous. Yeah, already he smells, for it is 4 days. Verse 40, Jesus says to her, I said to you, didn't I? Ugh, expecting a positive answer. I said to you, didn't I, that if you believe, you will see the glory of God. Then they took the stone, verse 41, and Jesus took his eyes, lifted his eyes, ano, up above, and said, Father, I thank you that you heard me, And I knew that always you hear me, but on account of the crowd, the one gathered around, the one standing around, I spoke, so that they may believe that you sent me. This is a huge Johannine theme. Some people think it's the central theme of the gospel that Jesus is the sent one. And over dozens of times, God the Father is called the one who sent me, the Father who sent me. And so in some verses, that's what it means to rightly acknowledge Jesus. It's to know that he is the one whom the Father has sent, of course, into the world to save it. And it's interesting, Jesus expects them to believe on the basis of the sign. This is an interesting theme in John, that the signs, faith as a result of signs in John is not a negative thing. You know, sometimes we walk by faith and not by sight, and we try to import Pauline theology, a particular kind of Pauline understanding, into John. It doesn't work that way in John. Yeah, that's the interesting thing. If you request a sign in John, Jesus says, what do I have to do with you? Right. Oh, faithless generation. That's right. He gets to decide the signs, doesn't he? Right. That's exactly right. So he finishes his prayer, verse 43. And after he had said these things, tau te apon, by means of a great sound, he cried out. This is I Love Jesus of Nazareth, that Franco Zeffirelli movie. And this is a great scene because he screams. I mean, well, he doesn't scream, but he... he goes like this. Right? I mean, it's very dramatic. And he goes... I get away from the mic. He goes... Lazarus! Just like that, you know, and then he finishes the sentence. I mean, it's really loud, you know. And then the scene is pictured like, Paul, what's wrong with you?
Frustrated actor.
I know. And then the camera angle is focused on the tomb, right, which is open, and it's like 50 yards away. And you see the shadows of people up, you know, on the ledge with Jesus. So you see the heads and shoulders of people, and then the body, you know, steps into view, and you see the shadows, you know, start milling around. I mean, it's a wonderful camera angle. It's just, oh, see, makes me want to go do that thing again. You're right, frustrated. No, I think I'm a frustrated rock and roll singer, Paul. But but you got to sing the blues if you want to. No, got to pay the dues. Lazarus, dero exo, come out, right? And here's another perfect participle. This is nice. The one who had died and stood as dead came out, and didemenos, and he was bound, or maybe just adjectival, the bound, the one who had died, and he was bound with respect to feet and hands with strips of cloth, and heopsis, the face of him was wrapped around perididomi with a sudario, which I think is the same word when they go into the empty tomb on Easter. The sudarion is laid over to the side by his head. And Jesus says to him, loose him, let him go, and permit him to depart. Aphete auton hip agen. And then 45 and 46. Therefore, many of the Jews, the ones who had come to Mary and had seen the things which he did, believed into him. So on the one hand, many of the Jews see this, and they believe. In verse 46, but, just a de, but the contrast is clear from context, but certain of those went away, ap elthan, prustan pharisaius, they go away to the Pharisees, and they say to them the things which Jesus did. Note that, I mean, what a stark contrast. Some see and believe, some see and go to the enemy. And then the rest of the chapter is this meeting at which Caiaphas, you know, prophetically, because he's the high priest, he prophetically speaks about Jesus' death for the one man dying for the people and so forth. I just think that in preaching this story, you somehow need to capture the wonder of it. I mean, the utter shock and mystery of it. And then theologically, I mean, Jesus is manifesting himself as the resurrection by raising somebody from the dead. And, you know, you could tie it in, you know, with Ezekiel 37. Obviously, it's hinting towards his own resurrection. He who is the resurrection and the life will himself first be raised and then on the last day raise us up. Lots and lots of theology here. Yeah, John? Yeah. Oh, uh-huh. Right, right. Although John, of course, isn't the most eloquent writer, you know, but he does use mende sometimes, and sometimes even the sequence of mende, although I can't remember a passage right now. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it really is a positive and a negative, as opposed to positive and potentially positive. Yeah, yeah, because Jesus' enemies are pretty well set in place by this time, so, yeah. Good. Very. And if you're going to do what I did, you know, back off from the mic like that and see if you can put on something of an English accent like that actor. Yeah, whoever that actor is. Yeah, oh, that's a great scene. I just love it. We always watch, Renee and I always watch Jesus of Nazareth, or at least part of it, around Easter time because it's so moving. So, and then the great thing about it is James Mason is Nicodemus, okay? And as he watches Jesus die, I mean, literally, as he watches the crucifixion from afar, this is apocryphal, but it's great theology, he quotes Isaiah 53. Okay. It's the only TV Jesus movie, or the only Jesus movie, I think, that a person could watch and actually be converted. I mean, really, there's actually theology in this movie. But I just...
Normally, he gives the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, I know. That's right. So if you ever have me for class and you see me do this, Watch out. Lazarus, come forth. Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, very good, John. Yeah.